This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But last August, her prayers were answered. Then she says the Red Cross called her, informing her that her siblings have been found.
That's Eugene Uimana reporting from Kigali. Details coming up also. Botswana becomes the fourth African country to decriminalize homosexual relations and the first to do so through the courts. An assistant U.S. Secretary of State for African Affairs warns Sudan that it needs to transition to a civilian-led government if it wants to improve relations with the U.S. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Microsoft today launched its first Africa Development Center, ADC, with two initial sites in Nairobi, Kenya, and Lagos, Nigeria. The ADCs are intended to serve as premier centers of engineering for Microsoft, where world-class African talents can create solutions for local and global impact. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio VOA's Salem Salamon. Welcome to African News Tonight, Salem.
Thanks for having me.
So, Salem, to start out our conversation, explain to our listeners what this new investment by Microsoft in Africa is all about.
Well, the new investment by Microsoft is launching what it calls the African Development Center. Its initial hubs are located in Lagos, Nigeria, and Nairobi in Kenya. So the company plans to invest $100 million in the project, and they're planning to hire 500 engineers within 5 years. So this follows an announcement in March by Microsoft that it was opening two data centers in South Africa, rivaling Amazon and other tech companies. I recently interviewed Amrote Abdallah, who happens to be originally from Ethiopia. She's the regional director of Microsoft's For Africa initiative, spelled as number four and then Africa with a K. So I asked her about this investment, and she said that this is really a reinforcement and commitment from the company that they are in Africa for the long haul, and they're here to stay.
So we have mentioned the sites, Nigeria and Kenya, and their respective capitals. So what will go on in Lagos, and what is planned for Nairobi?
Well, in Nairobi, engineers will work to ensure that in Windows and other Microsoft products work with millions of devices in use by African customers. So Microsoft stressed that it wants people with local knowledge who can examine exactly how people on the continent are using its products, like Microsoft Office and others. In Lagos, it's more advanced, and the tech industry is burgeoning there. So a team will focus on what they call mixed reality services. So what mixed reality services, including headsets and other devices, that will allow users to experience simulated scenarios and environments. So tools useful in training doctors, mechanics, and other professionals. So Microsoft is also planning to work with local universities to develop a curricula to prepare students for high-tech jobs focused on artificial intelligence, mixed reality, and other emerging trends.
So, Salem, what does this mean in terms of the bigger picture for the tech sector in Africa?
So this is big. I mean, this is part of a growing trend. You saw Google recently is working on artificial intelligence lab in Ghana. Meanwhile, you see Huawei, a Chinese tech giant, recently renewed and expanded a three-year memorandum of understanding with the African Union, despite tensions. Tensions between China and the U.S. could push African nations into choices over whom they partner with. So they'll have more more opportunities and choices. And so what this means for Microsoft, it means that the company is seeing enormous potential in the African tech sector. It also means that software developers and other highly skilled professionals on the continent will have more opportunities in Africa. They are hopeful that the so-called, you know, the brain drain could be reversed. And so what Amrote said when I was talking to her about this is that if you are a great software engineer and you don't have to leave the continent to have a good career, it is a game changer in that way, that you don't have to go somewhere else looking for opportunities.
A brighter era dawning in Africa for the tech sector. VOA Salem Salomon, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
Tibor Naz, the Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for African Affairs, plans to meet both members of the military leadership and protest leaders in Khartoum this week. The State Department says he will call for a cessation of attacks against civilians and urge parties to work towards resuming talks. Sudan's army last week attacked thousands of demonstrators who had been gathered for months near army headquarters. The crackdown came after weeks of stalemate in the talks with the protesters, who are demanding a swift transition to civilian rule. Dozens were killed in the attack. Naz denounced the crackdown as brutal and warned Sudan that it needed to transition to a civilian-led government if it wants to improve relations with the United States. However, three Arab allies of the U.S., Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE backed the Sudanese military council. Marina Ottaway, a senior scholar at the Woodward Wilson Institute, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi about that support.
They are afraid that any movement towards democracy in any Arab country will incite people inside their own citizens have no intention of allowing more democratic participation.
Why Egypt, while presiding over the African Union, did not mediate between the military council in Sudan and the protesters instead of Ethiopian Prime Minister?
Well, because I don't think mediating with protesters is part of what the Egyptian president does at this point. He, at home, he replies to protest by repression and not by dialogue. So it's not surprising that he should not be trying to mediate in another conflict.
So if the U.S. is calling repeatedly for a transition to a civilian rule in Sudan, how do you explain that three U.S. major allies are acting against what the United States wants?
Well, because, first of all, the United States is not really committed to Sudan. This is not an issue to which the United States gives great importance. Africa comes very low in the list of priorities. Democracy promotion comes very low in the list of priorities for the Trump administration. So that the support for a civilian government, it's more it's rhetoric. It's the kind of the boilerplate response that the United States always gives. So there is really no penalty to allies of the United States to make statements that go against the policy of the United States in this case.
But does the United States have a solid strategy on Sudan beyond just condemning the military crackdown against protesters?
No, I think it has absolutely no strategy. And I don't think it's even trying to develop a strategy. As I said before, keep in mind that African countries have a very low priority for the Trump administration. So I think the idea that the United States is going to do something to support the protesters in the Sudan, it's preposterous. De facto, there has been no support given to the protest. I mean, the United States made a lot of statements, but in practice, they have abandoned the protesters to their own fate, so that there is no reason to expect that the United States intends to do anything in the Sudan.
That was Marina Ottaway with the Woodward Wilson Institute in Washington speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shenawi. In Khartoum today, a civil disobedience general strike has entered its third day, and the city streets are quiet. Residents and journalists, they report that security forces continue to hold positions and patrol the city. In addition, protesters have erected barricades on roads in some neighborhoods. The Red Cross in Rwanda has launched a campaign on identifying and connecting lost children with their families. It says there are more than 1,000 lost children looking for their parents. Eugene Wimana has more details from Kigali.
Mwawenimana Yvette is a 30-year-old Burundian who recently found her family after 24 years. Now a mother of three children, she explains how hard it was to find her family members, though they were living in the same city of Kigali. She says people used to laugh at her when she was searching for her parents. They couldn't understand how she had not been discouraged after all those years. But last August, her prayers were answered. Then she says, the Red Cross called her, informing her that her siblings have been found. When she met them, they told her that her parents are dead. The Red Cross in Rwanda says that there are over 1,000 similar cases in the country, 800 children from Burundi and 200 from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Felix Kalekezi works for Red Cross Rwanda and is in charge of the effort to reunite families. He says they are telling children and parents not to lose hope. However odd the case may be, it's not impossible to find their beloved ones, because once they receive a request, they always work on it unceasingly. Since the 1994 genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi, the Red Cross has identified 20,000 Ugandan children who were separated from their parents. At the time, they have all been reunited. Now the focus is on Burundians and the Congolese who have lost their families when they were dispersed to different camps and forests while fleeing wars and violence. Kalechezi says they now have a reliable method to locate lost families. He says the first step is for Red Cross workers to visit them in the camps and register their cases with their photos. They make announcements on radios and TV. For the ones who might not be in Rwanda, we have electronic messages that we send to their countries of origin. That message goes with the photos and the family information too. He says they are now hopeful that this campaign will have good results. Rwanda hosts hundreds of Burundian refugees who fled their country during a 2015 political crisis when President Pierre Nkurunziza said he was seeking a third term. People fled to Rwanda, the DRC, Tanzania, and Uganda. The Red Cross thinks many of the lost parents of the Burundian children in Rwanda may live in those countries. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Nineteen past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Botswana has decriminalized homosexuality, a landmark decision in sub-Saharan Africa, where more than 24 countries have laws criminalizing gay sex. Today, Botswana's High Court ruled unconstitutional two sections of the country's penal code that made sex relations punishable by up to 7 years in prison. Judge Michael Elburu said the laws, many of which were holdovers from colonial times, oppressed a minority of the population. The ruling drew cheers from activists who had packed the courtroom. The court has been petitioned by a person who remained anonymous for security reasons. Pro-gay activists were dealt a blow last month when Kenya's High Court upheld laws against same-sex relations. Before Tuesday's ruling, 28 out of 49 sub-Saharan countries had laws penalizing same-sex activity. The joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS, UNAIDS, applauded today's ruling, saying criminalization of consensual same-sex relations is a violation of human rights. The Democratic Republic of the Congo today declared a measles epidemic is underway in the country, which also is battling an Ebola outbreak in its eastern provinces. In Kinshasa, the health ministry said there have been at least 87,000 reported cases. As many as 1,500 measles patients have died. The ministry says the measles virus is spreading in 23 of the country's 26 provinces. It is pushing ahead with a new vaccination program. In April, more than 2 million children were vaccinated. The Zimbabwe government says it has secured a strategic partner for the state-owned company responsible for procuring, processing, and marketing beef, lamb, goat, and related products. But as Arigando reports from Bulawayo, the deal has raised some concerns.
The Cold Storage Commission was formed in 1938 to develop Zimbabwe's beef industry and to promote the economic interests of white beef producers. By 1987, the state-controlled CSC employed nearly 5,000 employees, earning about $32 million a year. At its height, it processed 150,000 tons of beef, helping make Zimbabwe a leading exporter of beef in Africa. Since 2000, however, the CSC has struggled with a shortage of funding and a heavy load of foreign debt. An outbreak of hoof and mouth disease ended its exports in 2007. The Minister of Finance says the company now has a new strategic partner, a British company called Boosted Beef, which promises to inject US$130 million into the joint venture over 5 years. The agreement, however, comes with some controversy. Reginald Shoko is an economic analyst who is critical of the deal with the foreign company.
One thing that we have to notice and say is in our appetite for foreign direct investment, we need not to forget the local entrepreneurs. $130 million is a bit of a lot of money in terms of figures, but I think local entrepreneurs could have raised that money. So we should have considered offering them a local, especially an asset of that nature.
However, others note that one of Boosted Beef's managing director is a Zimbabwean, Nick Havercroft. The government says Boosted will take over CSC's debts of US$42 million and pay US$100,000 a year in rent for the first 5 years. Dumisani Sbanda, an economic analyst, says Boosted's assumption of CSC's debt is unusual.
Yeah, that is very abnormal. To me, that's not normal. Because what normally invests, because $2 million is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. There's no one who would want to move in and absorb $42 million. Because that is not a very easy market. The beef market is not an easy market.
Boosted Beef will manage 7 CSC cattle ranches for an initial period of 25 years, aiming to return to the international beef market. However, the deal has raised questions. There are news reports questioning Boosted Beef's ability to make good on its plans, because some corporate records in Britain made it appear as though it had little funding or expertise in agriculture. Managing Director Nick Havercroft rejects those concerns. In a series of texts, he points to his own track record of creating a successful tobacco production company in Zimbabwe, a green energy company in Africa, and 2 biotechnology companies, one in Britain and one in the United States. He says that Boosted Beef is an arm of a company that dates back nearly 200 years in Asia and Britain and has funding from a variety of investors. Even with the concerns about bypassing local investors, several business analysts say they welcome Boosted's investment into CSC. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo.
Life is slowly returning to normal in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, despite the general strike called by pro-democracy activists. Our reporter Mongo Ugel in Khartoum says the pro-democracy protesters are divided on how to proceed with the nationwide strike, which began yesterday. Ugel spoke with VOA's John Tanza.
There is a slight improvement on life on the streets of Khartoum. Few shops have opened, some banks are operating, public buses are moving in and around Khartoum, and some roadblocks have been removed. But still, there is a heavy deployment of the security forces all over the town.
We are hearing that the pro-democracy activists have released names of people that they want to be in the transitional government. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, they have announced eight names. The eight names actually formed the what they call the Leadership Council of the Freedom and Change Coalition, which include three women. But those names have not been revealed. They only announced that they have selected eight members, including three women, who should be called now the Leadership Council of the Coalition. Among these eight people, they have named Abdallah Hamadok. They have nominated him to take the position of the prime minister during the interim government.
What do you know about this Abdallah? Who is he?
What I know a little about Abdallah Hamadok is an international UN staff. He works in the finance department of the African Affairs at the UN United Nations in New York. But he's based in Addis Ababa bureau office.
Are there other names that has leaked out of the eight?
There are no names. The only name leaked out is the name of Abdallah Hamadok so far up to now.
How about the nationwide strike? Is it still going on?
As we speak, there is a long meeting among the Freedom and Change Coalition group. We are hearing reports that they are divided on whether to call off the strike or the civil disobedience, or should it be continued for the coming days. So there are groups saying strikes should be called off so people can continue their normal life. But others, like the Sudanese Professional Association, they are saying no, they will continue with the strike and civil disobedience till the demands are met. So as we speak, they are still for the long meeting, and maybe the outcome of the meeting is yet to be announced. This is the development among the Freedom and Change Coalition.
And what about the Transitional Military Council? Have they made any statement on these nominations from the coalition of the activists?
They have not yet made any public statement, but they have not been in a direct contact with the coalition. The military junta announced preliminary report on the investigation on the protesters' crackdown on incident. They actually announced that they have managed to identify suspects who believed to have committed crimes against civilians on the June 3rd incident. So the head of the security and defense, Jamal Omar, could not give the exact number of the suspects that they have apprehended. However, he says the suspects would be tried within the next 72 hours, that is 3 days to come. So this is the latest development that was announced last evening. And we are also hearing reports that there is a possibility that they are going to announce the steering government in the coming days, possibly within this week.
That is VOA reporter Mongo Ugel speaking with VOA's John Tanza on the latest from Sudan. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, The CEOs of Kenya and South African Airways have announced their resignations. Does this signal a lack of progress for African airlines? Africa's airline woes on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.